Welcome back to the Business of Sustainability podcast. Today's episode is a special one because we are recording all the way from Trinidad and Tobago, a place that we have become completely taken with over the past week. The kindness, hospitality, vibrant culture, and the food have made this experience unforgettable. It's been a busy and inspiring few days here. Polly, Sam and I have been exhibiting Future Plus at the American Chamber of Commerce Trinidad and Tobago HSSE Conference 2025. We've been meeting businesses, reconnecting with partners, forming new relationships and recording this very special episode with the brilliant Maria Elena Navarro and Anya A. Young Chi from We Are Sovereign. Before we dive in, we want to give a huge thank you to the Odyssey podcast. Their platform brings listeners thoughtful entertainment through meaningful conversations with remarkable people, and it feels especially fitting for today's discussion. The incredible hosts, you can find them on Instagram at Kristen Hay and at Jerome GD, generously provide us with the equipment and the clearest setup guidance we could have asked for. Truly, this episode wouldn't have been possible without them. So again, a huge thank you. We've been genuinely moved by the optimism, collaboration, and the open-heartedness of the business community here in Trinidad and Tobago. And we're so excited to continue building on the relationships we've formed as we support and learn from the sustainability efforts across the region. So, with all that said, let's get into today's episode. Today, we have a very special episode, and we are joined by Maria Elena Navarro and Anya A. Young Chi from We Are Sovereign, a visionary organisation rooted in the Caribbean and built for global impact. And together we've launched a partnership to help businesses in Trinidad and Tobago transform their sustainability performance, bringing global ESG standards and local insight together in one powerful collaboration. We are really lucky that we are actually recording this in Trinidad, and more on that in a little bit. But Anya, Maria Elena, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your backgrounds? And we'd love to welcome you to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. It is wonderful, as you mentioned, that we're doing this in person. Never did we think when we started this partnership that we'd be here today having this conversation. So it really signals an opportunity that we envisioned in the beginning and now is coming to full fruition. I am Anya Youngshi, as you mentioned. I am first and foremost a fashion designer and tech entrepreneur, as well as a social innovator, co-founder of Sovereign with Maria Elena. And we are together partnering to be able to bring the consultancy services and programmatic design to Caribbean companies starting in Trinidad and Tobago in partnership with Future Plus to, as you mentioned, bridge the gap between local capacity and local sustainability desires or aspirations to a global standard.
And I'm Maria Elena Navarro. It's a pleasure to be here. Very excited to be meeting all the team here in Trinidad. I would say first and foremost, I have a massive passion for design-led work, human-centered design, that was really fostered through when I first met Anya and worked with Anya in a social enterprise where we were supporting and designing programming for entrepreneurs. And it was really in learning that I had this passion of human-centered design that after that sort of initial involvement with Anya, we decided to really harness the power of that sort of methodology and being able to apply it to more businesses, more contexts. And that's really what we're trying to do, as Anya mentioned, with Sovereign. And apart from what I do with Sovereign, I'm also a ballerina. It's one of my largest passions. And yeah, it's a little bit about me.
Amazing backgrounds from both of you. And we've been, you know, obviously had a bit of a chat before the podcast started. There are many firsts today. So our first Trinidad phonic podcast, first ballerina, first fashion designer. And so it's very excited, and we're really looking forward to having a conversation about what we're hoping to deliver. And the Future Plus team has been in Trinidad for the last couple of days at a conference, and I think we've had a huge learning curve and found out lots about culture here in Trinidad and Tobago around business, around sustainability. And it'd be great to sort of dive into some of that with you guys today. So my first question for you on that basis is, you know, we are combining what we do, global platform, Future Plus, looking to sort of measure and manage and improve and report sustainability for companies, with you guys, local insight around the social, economic, environmental issues around that are happening in Trinidad at the moment. Do you want to talk about a little bit how we met and why what we're doing seems to be so complementary in the work that we've been doing over the last nearly a year, I think it is?
We met through a mutual acquaintance who was very generous to connect us and give us the opportunity to discuss ways in which our past experience building organizations, Nudge, for instance, which was in partnership with Massey, and Spool, which is a IDB Lab-sponsored project that I developed as well. That design thinking methodology applied to social impact, very lived experience of embedding sustainability into the work that we've done, but being able to measure effectively, being able to create structures and formats within which the expectations from a global standard could actually be accessible, because we, prior to the conversation with you, did not have those frameworks, did not have the technology, did not have the experience to be able to accelerate the lived experience that we have with the infrastructure that you've developed.
Yeah, I think we've used the sentence a few times this week over like a globally relevant but locally applicable, and having the ability to have that partnership with you guys to have a framework that works and is considered useful and understandable by companies outside of Trinidad and Tobago, but really being able to apply what that looks like so it's relevant and appropriate for businesses in Trinidad, I think, because they do have, there is different business culture here, there's different needs, different challenges, and it's been really important that whatever happens isn't just because somebody else has been doing it somewhere else in the world, but actually that it's really impactful for businesses and commercially viable for businesses here.
Culturally relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been, we've been working with TISL as well, with yourself, one of the companies based here in Trinidad for a little while. And we've been working really closely on that. Can you give us a bit of background on that as well?
Yeah, so Technical Integrated Services is a 50-year-old service-based industry supporting the oil and gas industry here in Trinidad, which is the largest economic driver here for the country. They offer all types of services to the oil and gas businesses and work with all the major players. So they're at this sort of unique area in their sort of legacy where they've grown so quickly over the last 50 years, particularly within the last 10 to 15 years, that their infrastructure really needs to sort of catch up to where they are. And they've looked at the Future Plus framework and the sort of technology that y'all offer. And that's sort of giving them a roadmap to achieve what their goals are, which is really to future-proof their organization. That's really what their focus is right now. And so you're providing with your technology and then with our support, which is very hands-on, they're really able to sort of have a very clear, actionable roadmap to get them where they want to go. And I think a large part of it as well is that no sort of ESG framework or ESG goal is going to be achieved if it's not really understood and if there's not a real business case for it. You know, so I think that was another thing as well, is that the leadership there understood and recognized that there is a genuine business opportunity. You know, when you invest in ESG in this way, when it's actually actionable in this way, it's going to lower your operational costs, it's going to engage your employees, it's going to strengthen client trust. There's all these positives that can come out of it. And I think once you have that stronger why defined, then all of the cultural shifts are a lot easier to sort of maintain.
Anya, we've noticed, especially, I mean, this is luckily my second visit to Trinidad in the last few months, but even in this visit, the last couple of days, the conversations that we're having with companies of all sizes, and actually really interestingly, all sectors, there seems to be a really tangible appetite for change and for sort of improving and formalising what sustainability means for businesses here. What do you think might be driving this, or what do you see that's sitting behind all of it?
Globally, there's a critical mass of awareness that has obviously, you know, changed the perception around the need for sustainability. Again, to both of your points, being embedded not just as an afterthought and a, you know, box-ticking exercise, but really embedded in your business strategy and how does it align with the ever-growing expectation from both local and regional and international audiences of all industries, really and truly, but obviously in some sectors more than others, coupled with the reality of living in this part of the world where we are very susceptible to a wide variety of natural disasters. It's, you know, well known that as much as we have not necessarily contributed to the state of affairs when it comes to climate, for instance, at least at not the scale that large industrial nations have, we inevitably end up bearing the brunt of a lot of the ripple effect. And so that's our lived experience. We just went through Hurricane Melissa in Jamaica as evidence of that. So it's an everyday experience of the need for more sustainable practice being built into the infrastructure of companies that have the potential to have ripple effect on communities. And I think that there's a level of desire to see global practice be more embedded in local businesses just so that we can compete, because there is a commercial requirement and economic need that is happening in this perfect storm of many different aspects of our region and the world in need of that inflection point to be crossed.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we see there's a bit of a gap between that international ESG frameworks and local application. And I think what we're hoping to do as part of this is bridge some of that gap. But, you know, how do you see that actually coming to life as part of this partnership? And maybe, you know, Mari, one for you to take.
I think that a lot of organizations are recognizing that this is where they need to be headed, but may not have the capacity or the bandwidth to really execute on it. And then back to the point that I'd made earlier where there's a relevance, you know, and I think that a lot of them are trying to understand how will this benefit my organization? And once they can get that, then the bandwidth becomes less of an issue holding them back and a roadblock. And I would say, you know, what you are beginning to see is a general drive from actual startups who are really innovating around sustainability and sort of pushing the agenda more. And I think in the Caribbean in general, like, there's a tendency where a lot of people may not want to take the first step or be the first ones to take the risk. But then there are those risk takers who would. And once something is proving to be working and functional and reaping results and rewards, then people are much happier to jump on and be like, oh, we'll get on that too. And you tend to see that happen a lot here in many aspects, not just in the sustainability conversation. But I do see that what Future Plus is offering being so much of a heavy, what comes across as a heavy lift initially, and that y'all are making it a quite easy lift instead, something that is a difficult conversation, or what might feel like a difficult task, people are able to achieve quite easily with your technology. And I think that is really going to allow organizations here in this territory to sort of close that gap. You know, because they don't need a lot of bandwidth to execute a Future Plus roadmap or to complete a Future Plus assessment. In fact, a very lean team can make it happen. There just needs to be the willpower to make it happen. And I think also going back to the why of what is it that we care about? What is it we want to measure?
Yeah, I was going to ask about like specific issues for Trinidad around sustainability, but maybe sort of caveat that with what also has been really interesting to see is it's all the same problems all over the world. Mm-hmm. You know, it's companies with people who have sustainability as an addition to their job role. It's people wearing multiple hats. It's resource capacity, the ability to innovate, where sustainability sits within an organization. It's the same problems that we come across in the States, in the UK, in Europe. And it's really interesting to see. And we talk about this a lot when we, you know, we work with companies across multiple sectors and across quite a wide geography. There's rarely a new problem. Right. You know, lots of times it might be a slightly different application of the problem, or it's a slightly different version, but actually when you get down to the core issue around how do you put sustainability, you know, how do you build sustainability into businesses strategically, or what are the issues around sustainability, there's so much constant around it that, you know, as you were saying, you know, sort of weather issues, food scarcity, water scarcity, they're the same conversations that we're having. Yeah, we're having, you know, even a conversation we're having recently with a client in London is actually some of its buildings are in a water scarce area. And having that conversation with someone in London, they're sort of like, really? But also we've had exactly that same conversation with people here.
And that's what's Trinidad. Interesting about your platform. And I guess, you know, that discipline of measuring is it can create universality around issues and therefore universality around problem solving, right? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I distinctly remember the first time I drove across the United States and it was such an eye-opening experience to realize the levels of poverty, the levels of, you know, lack of infrastructure that you don't see on TV. Yeah. And you don't recognize is actually part of the developed, quote-unquote, developed world reality too. And that demystification, I think, is what, from a bridging perspective, we can attempt to do in this partnership, and we have huge potential to do, because one is the demystification of the use of this technology actually makes measuring, reporting, and committing to your goals very accessible, mm-hmm. both financially and capacity-wise, coupled with demystification of what does sustainability really mean when you are aligning your business to be in service to people, right? Because if essentially all businesses at their core are in service to somebody, but whether it's a byproduct or a service or a combination of the two, then in essence, you know, what you're trying to do is just systemize that. You're trying to do that at a more effective level. You're attempting to bridge your values with how you do business. And this technology, this tool, and the services that we collectively provide just create journey maps to do that. Just break down the process so that all the semantics around ESG and sustainability have, to some degree, made more of a mountain out of a molehill than needs to exist, when really and truly at the core, as a value-based company, which in this world we all get to be for simple survival and thriving, it's just designing how to do that, essentially.
You know, one of the challenges that we often find with companies, and I think probably exists quite clearly here, is moving ESG from compliance or sort of the tick box exercise, which we always sort of see as, you know, that's where you see it as a cost center, mm-hmm. and moving it forward into the strategic way of how a business operates more risk-free, you know, or risk-reduced and resilient. Are you seeing that change happening, or are you seeing challenges around that with local businesses here?
I think that there continues to be that culture, you know, despite, I think there is progress being made, it's going to take a while to really surpass the box ticking. It does exist. I see it in all the organizations. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that there is the championing of internal teams. You know, I know a lot of guys who work, and girls who work in QHSE departments, and I know that there's a level of interest and involvement in not just having, whether it's their ISO certifications or whatever certification or global framework they're attempting to meet or comply with, that this goes beyond just having policies in place, or it goes beyond just making sure that they can complete this to get a certification to enter a bid. It's about really living it. So I do believe, and I have faith, that internally there are champions who are pushing it through. I think that there's more that needs to be done from a leadership level to really make sure that it kind of ripples down, because it's very difficult for those types of things to take effect from the bottom up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there does need to be a champion from a decision-making level really forwarding that type of mandate. And that can often be difficult, because maybe perhaps they feel disconnected from what the reality or the strategic sort of objective might be. And I think that's another unique sort of value proposition of the partnership between Future Plus and Sovereign, because with what y'all are being able to provide with your technology, with your consultancy, leaning on us as sort of like your on-the-ground local team, we can kind of help have those conversations and help sort of close the gap of where there may be, you know, just questions or, you know, uncertainties. And yeah, just sort of bring people closer to understanding that we all have a responsibility, particularly as a nation whose primary industry is oil and gas, even more so, a responsibility that goes much more beyond tick box ticking. So I think that I want to be hopeful and know that that's where we're headed. And in time, I think we'll get there once we remain really solid on what our, you know, objectives are.
I think the combination of our approaches to this work is actually quite practical. You guys speak quite a lot of it about leading with commercial benefits. That is a reality for businesses to thrive and survive. So box ticking in and of itself may not necessarily be the issue, more so what boxes are you ticking and why, and being sort of helpful to companies in establishing how do you match your vision to your strategy, and how does your strategy roll out into execution in a way that, say, for instance, foreign exchange is a huge issue in Trinidad and Tobago, access to it. So the emphasis on companies looking towards export markets and growing globally is paramount. In order to do that, you need to be certified in whatever industries that you are, because the global standards are different to ours. How do we bridge that gap? How do we design which boxes are being ticked? Recognizing that, just bluntly, that is what businesses need to do to function, right? So it's not necessarily, I think, doing away with the practicality of it, and for teams to be able to deliver on their metrics and their milestones. But I do think there's a gap between being able to do that without alignment on the core inside and intent of the business. And how does that really actually drive progress, both for the company bottom line and for the communities in which they operate.
I couldn't agree more. And actually, it leads me on really nicely to what I was going to talk about next. And you mentioned TASL is an oil and gas company. And a lot of Trinidad and Tobago's economy has deep roots in energy and manufacturing. I mean, when you come to Trinidad, you can see it everywhere. And it's actually the conversation we were having yesterday as a team at Future Plus is that, and Mario, I think you and I had it around, there's a lot of pride around that. And, you know, rightly so, it's changed the economy of the island and given a huge amount of opportunity. And you can see that everywhere. But I think sometimes that can come at potentially a sort of friction around some of the sustainability conversations. How do you see sustainability sort of working with, you know, you've got firsthand experience of this, and you know, a lot of sustainability companies don't necessarily want to work with oil and gas. And we took a decision with you guys and you know, here in Trinidad, that it was really important for us to work with companies that wanted to improve, and they wanted to improve across environment, across climate, across social, economic, across DEI. And if they want to improve, then you know, you need people that can help them do that, and the right sustainability frameworks need to be able to do it. But do you see any sort of challenges with those industries and where that can lead sort of sustainability in Trinidad?
I think, as Anya mentioned, I mean, the world is changing and there are global sort of frameworks and recognitions that people need to maintain if they want to sort of remain competitive. So despite whatever industry that they're a part of, it's in their interest to sort of meet these, right? So I say that first as sort of like a disclaimer. Then I'll talk about our industry. And yes, there is a lot of pride in our oil and gas industry. It's the one industry that like didn't shut down during COVID, you know. Those were the workers that were out working, apart from obviously people who are working in the food industry and other sort of key service sectors. But it's the gold bead of the country, right? And I think that, as I was mentioning earlier, that there is a responsibility that I think every organization understands they bear when it comes to the sustainability and measuring their metrics. I think that a lot of the major players do a great job at this already. Most of them already have established impact initiatives that they work on, or sustainable projects, you know, that they work in partnership with other organizations to sort of fulfill. You know, I know that there's one organization that works on the mangrove, and I think that y'all shared a seat on the panel, and one of them were speaking about that project. And I know that there's good work being done. So I think that we're getting closer. And as I mentioned earlier as well, people often like to see that something is working and that it's not excluding them. And once there's an opportunity for them to get involved in something, they'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, we've been at a health and safety conference essentially over the last couple of days, and we've had a lot of CEOs of some of the biggest companies talking, and every single one of them has talked about sustainability in a way that feels they have a genuine wish and a want to implement it in the right way for their company to be as resilient as possible, with an understanding and a absolutely brilliant self-awareness of what they are doing, mm-hmm. And what their contributions are to greenhouse gas emissions, but also what the potential is for them moving forward. And so it's been really interesting, and I suppose an education for us to hear that conversation directly from CEOs of some of the companies that are doing it, who's just saying nothing changes unless you've got that sort of board and senior leadership backing for things to happen. And you know, how that is implemented into businesses and executed is probably another story and something we can sort of go get to. But it's been really interesting for us, particularly as a team, to see that they really do want to do things the best way possible and to reduce their emissions and be part of this sort of wave of change towards renewables or whatever it may be, and put themselves in the best place. Mm-hmm. So, but there are also a lot of SMEs in Trinidad. And where do you see potentially the challenges for those guys, or where can they potentially leap ahead because of what they're doing and the scale? Is there an opportunity for them at the moment?
Well, this is our favorite topic. Nudge Caribbean, which we formed in partnership with Massey, was an ecosystem of MSMEs, particularly micro and small businesses across three islands, Trinidad and Tobago, St. Lucia and Barbados. And in our experience, the idea of sort of embedding proper sustainability practice is very overwhelming for small companies. The concept of, on top of the fact that you're you know, chief bottle cooker and everything at the same time, and you have to figure out how to be sustainable is overwhelming. But the reality is a lot of these companies, as small as they were or as small as they are sourcing ethically for their raw materials, are hiring ethically, are contributing to their communities, even if it's just by hiring practices. They're already acting as a sustainable entity. It's this gap in the semantics and the bigness of ESG as an acronym, and I could never aspire to that, right? But really, if you dig down, their everyday decisions are actually reflecting ethics in their choices. And ethics is maybe the wrong word, but my point is it's embedded.
Yeah.
And I think it's celebrating that and connecting that to how it's measured and giving them a platform like this that allows them to measure affordably, reports affordably, which is the best thing about this platform that you've built, bridges that gap and gives people an opportunity to participate and even better yet be able to lead and not lag from an export perspective, to speak to their potential consumers outside of the region in a way that puts them ahead, tells stories about ethical practice in a way that consumers outside of the region are probably more likely to respond to. So I think it actually is a leading factor. It's an opportunity to tell stories that are authentic, bridge the consumers to the ways in which they're contributing to communities in this part of the world, and do so in an accessible way. And that is a story that we want to be able to tell over and over and over again. As a fashion designer myself, this is exactly what we're doing. And we're making every effort within our means, within our capacity, to make sure that wages are fair, that the way in which we train and employ is very, that is the essence of the business. Mm-hmm. And in essence, I mean, we're performing at a certain level that, once measured, upholds the global standard.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we come across this all the time, that actually so many businesses are just naturally doing things around social impact, mm-hmm. or around economic impact or environment. And it becomes, until you sort of say, this is sustainability.
Take away the ESG.
What you're doing is having a positive impact on the communities that you operate in, with, to and from. And so it's that consolidating and understanding, and then being able to confidently communicate it is a really important part. Because, as you say, it's just, especially a lot of businesses here in Trinidad, particularly family businesses that have real, that do really have values at the heart of where they started and where they are now. So it's been
almost always. But I will, not to make light of it, because I think the education around it is crucial. The capacity building around the how, to build systems around it, so it's not anecdotal, it's actually embedded in your practices and your operations, and then the ability to measure and report. And we take that for granted at this stage, because that was at the heart of how we operated Nudge, and we had tremendous privilege of working with a 100-year-old company that has all the infrastructure to afford that, so we were in a unique position. But again, Future Plus gives a small company that infrastructure, it gives it that capacity. And I think it's the education to learn how to do that and to make it systemized is really where we get to bridge the gap.
And I think that what's unique about SMEs is that they're, as being startups, they're inherently agile. So they can pivot, test, change. That's kind of how we operated at Nudge. And then these older companies, it might be more difficult to sort of retrofit sustainability, within a 20-year organization, 50-year, maybe even 100-year organization, So it's difficult at that point to sort of build it into your DNA, whereas SMEs are really positioned to be able to do that. And I think that's something that is really powerful position to be in.
Yeah, we were talking about partnerships the other day, and the value of mentoring. It should never be one way.
Right.
Small companies and SMEs can have a huge amount to actually teach those bigger, larger, more legacy organizations, and vice versa, and actually using the skill sets of what they're really good at is a really nice way to partner and collaborate to get that change to happen faster in communities.
I think. I would take that one step further, because the thing is that Trinidad in particular, but the whole region is a... We were the conduit of many, many different points of migration from Africa, Asia, and Europe into North America and South America, right? So we have a very unique combination of cultures and histories. So when you really dig down into that, the collective wisdom that exists from indigenous practice that we really overlook a lot of the time when it comes to establishing best practice that is really quite ancient. I mean, we don't really have to reinvent anything, but we have to open up ourselves to trust that wisdom, to create models and actual implementable practices out of that wisdom. And in essence, you know, we're a very young region. Most of our countries are in the range of 60 to 80 years old, right? So that memory is not very far away. And we are very community-based. We're, all of our islands are, you know, around 1 million people, 40,000 people. Like, we're small. So sustainable practice is embedded in how we live. It's just oftentimes been forgotten and sort of rinsed away by capitalism and commercialism and lots of different reasons. But how do you bridge those two things? How do you harness the indigenous wisdom in a way that is practical, implementable, measurable, reportable, and brings you into this you know, part of our history effectively?
Yeah, absolutely. The cultural values in Trinidad, I think, feel very at the surface. I mean, we've, as you say, it is a real melting pot of people from so many cultures. I mean, even just walking around, we're in a sort of reasonably commercial side of the Port of Spain,
urban,
I would say.
Yes.
And still, it's everywhere.
Yeah. And you feel it in the food. You feel it in the diversity
in the
of the food.
Yeah, I mean, I can absolutely guarantee I'm going home a stone heavier after 4 days. I have tried all the food from all of the places and it is all absolutely delicious.
Should.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're, you know, part of why we're here, as I say, is for a health and safety conference. And it's been held by AmCham TNT, which is the American Chamber of Commerce here. You know, there's quite a strong pull between the SMEs and the businesses. What do you think sort of the role of businesses like Chamber of Commerce can play in maybe connecting some of those dots?
I mean, it's going to sound a little bit repetitive, but I think it's exactly what we're just saying, that like we operate on a very networked, tightly knit networked basis where small communities ripple out, and the connection between businesses of all sizes is much closer than the average in bigger societies. So entities like AmCham that essentially institutionalize that, create systems and frameworks to scale that approach, to being able to spread the word, to share best practice, to develop more and more ways for companies to leverage one another's strengths and complement and co-creates and collaborates is what I think AmCham can do best. And I mean, ideally, that's what happens here, that they become a lever of expansion and ripple of what this partnership can offer many companies, and ways in which, particularly from an education standpoint, like how do you break down and demystify what this is even all about? I think organizations like AmCham give us a way in which to disseminate and information and create more opportunity for faster uptake of the opportunity.
For people getting started on this journey, and we have met some companies that are still in their infancy around sort of sustainability and ESG reporting in Trinidad, if you had to speak to a CEO, like, where do you start? What's the first step? Mari, what's your advice?
Yeah, and I think it's a great question, because it's come up in our conversations today already. You know, oftentimes you might find a project later down the road is saying, wait, what were our metrics of success? So I would definitely start by saying, well, what are we measuring and why? Because you can't manage what you're not measuring. And oftentimes, you know, you need to understand what your baseline is. What are our strengths? What are our risks? What are our gaps? And I think a big part of it as well is an organization looking to implement an ESG framework really needs to have a very clear sense of their why and their North Star. So a very clear purpose. What are they intending to position themselves as? What are they intending to do? What are they intending to bring value to or impact in their community, in their region? And I think once that there's a sense of clarity around that, then you can go into, okay, well, what are we going to measure? To Anya's point earlier.
Yeah.
Once you're understanding what you're measuring, then you have a great place to start. And again, I think that's what Future Plus has been able to simplify and remove a lot of complexity out of. You make those indicators very clear from the get-go. So it's not about trying to make up the indicators on your own.
Yeah.
They're there. And it's just a matter of saying, yes, we're meeting this, or no, we're not. And it's okay. We're not going to judge ourselves. We're not meeting that right now. But let's set an ambition if we want to get there. And maybe we want to get there sooner. Maybe we want to get there a little bit later. We can put the infrastructure in place to allow ourselves to get there. And so it really just sort of like breaks it up. But I would definitely first start with identifying, well, what's our core purpose here? And then from there, identifying the metrics.
Yeah, I think that we always start with the assess.
Yeah.
Like, where are you? And then plant, where do you want to get to? And we see a lot of businesses trying to put in sustainability initiatives without understanding what sustainability is for them, very much to your point. There's no why or no North Star. And I think that can really trip people up because they get so, as you know, exactly as you said, they get so far into it and somebody goes, why are we
doing this?
Why are we doing this?
And a lot of investment later.
A lot of investment.
And always a lot, and resources.
And it jades them.
Yeah, they get fatigue, right? And I think a lot of sustainability fatigue comes from... particularly back in the UK, of people consistently reporting on something that makes absolutely no impact or change, and they don't really know why they're
That's the worst feeling. It's like all of that energy goes into something, and we've felt that experience sometimes where you're like, what was it all like? Did it really impact?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where we want to shake things up. Like, we want to work on projects that genuinely have impact, and in order to do that, this is what we see as sort of like the framework to make it happen.
Yeah. And once businesses have done that, what's the next step? How do they start communicating to investors and to stakeholders, to employees, around what it is that they've done? How do you sort of get that messaging out there?
Well, I think this is the power of measuring, that you can, especially if you have the discipline to measure at the beginning of a process or at whatever point you start taking this on intentionally all the way through, and having the, I guess, courage to be a bit vulnerable and open about your journey as opposed to the perfection of the end. And this is another thing that we have had such deep alignment with your company and how you operate, that there's a lot of transparency around, one, where we started, secondly, where we're going, and how we plan to get there. And actually the storytelling could be a reflection of the journey as opposed to the completion. And in this part of the world, a perfect showing a performance of perfection is very commonly how we are expected to show up, especially bigger companies. But I think breaking that down actually would be very powerful, and storytelling, encouraging companies to storytell about the journey, but being very disciplined about, these are our intentions. We have mapped our journey. We have done the visioning. We have done the assessment. We have mapped our milestones, and we've mapped the how we intend to get there. And you can help us stay accountable to that, and that actually becomes an engagement opportunity. So the engagement opportunity in and of itself, especially in this day and age of digital marketing, and you add the power of AI to really build ways in which to enhance that kind of engagement with your audiences and your clients and your customers, that actually becomes a whole other level of communication. It's no longer just a one-way experience. You have this ongoing feedback loop around the impact of how your work in this space is actually working. So I think storytelling becomes very dynamic at that stage. It's one, it's data-based, so it's not disputable. Mm-hmm. Two, it's reflective of an ongoing effort. And three, it engages your audience in a much more dynamic way than ever was accessible before.
And it gives, I think it's that progress over perfection, that you don't have to have reached the end point before you start talking about it.
Yes.
And that actually some of your impact can come between storytelling about what went wrong and right.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. As well. I think, especially in sort of smaller communities where there's so much to learn from each other.
Absolutely.
We talk a lot about ambition at Future Plus. It's a really big part of what we do, hence progress over perfection. What's your sovereign's vision for sustainability in the Caribbean over the next few years?
Very ambitious. We love to have these types of conversations. We have them quite often. I think that one of the things that has come up in the past and continues to sort of show relevance is that we would love to establish something that is as respected as something like the Fair Trade Agreement, something that's contextually relevant for this region. And we have so much buy-in where it does sort of sway policy and it does create something as groundbreaking as that. And I think that we have the ambition to get there, the drive to get there. I'm not saying that that's exactly what we're going to produce, but that's the type of goals that we set for ourselves, because we genuinely do believe that this region is just soaked with talent. We have incredibly talented people. We have incredibly innovative people. And I would also say that what distinguishes our cultures as well, and I talk about the Caribbean in this sense, is that we're very resilient people, so I think we have this unique blend of talent and skills that deserve to be harnessed and deserve to be able to show up on a world stage, and that oftentimes don't often get that privilege and that access, right? So at Sovereign, it's all about being able to bridge the gap open up doors that really allow conversations to happen that can ultimately lead to significant impact.
It's a reiteration of Mary in the sense that, you know, how can we remove the compliance burden actually and reframe this as an opportunity to express ourselves as incredibly resilient, incredibly innovative, incredibly creative and talented people applied to sustainability? And how does that actually position us to generate wealth through sustainability as opposed to, you know, well, we're just sort of surviving and reacting. I think we're very good at being resilient, but how do we look forward and project our unique talents and abilities in very creative ways? Knowing that in so doing we create regenerative cultures, we create sustainable and circular economies, we begin to thrive as the essence of who we are. And I think that reframing is crucial, because as long as we consider it a burden, it will just continue to be something we're catching up with. Mm-hmm. When we reframe it as an opportunity to show up in our genius as creative people, then we start to tell a story that has impact across the world.
Yeah, well, we couldn't be more excited to continue this partnership, and it's been such an incredible conversation with you both today. We have so much more to learn from you guys, and hopefully we can share a little bit of our knowledge as well. But thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
It's been so fabulous. And this has been an incredible conversation about how globally relevant actions and local expertise can work together to create real and measurable impact. If you're a business in Trinidad and Tobago and ready to start your sustainability journey, you can learn more at future-plus.co.uk or connect with We Are Sovereign to see how the partnership can help turn your ambition into action. And until next time, thanks for listening to the Business of Sustainability podcast, where we talk about building a better future.